Hi, Carla Frisch. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Bill. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Carla Frisch does policy work, planning, some implementation, helping cities. She's a city change maven, actually, helping cities transform to zero greenhouse gas emission pollution. She works at the Rocky Mountain Institute on their program. It's called America's Pledge, working to ensure that this country remains a global leader in reducing those emissions. That's quote from them. Before that, for 10 years, she worked at the U.S. Department of Energy with similar responsibilities. Carla Frisch, first give us your analysis of the Biden plan. It was partly a Kerry-Sanders negotiation, Biden plan. Then we can get to what Biden must do to stop global roasting and how the Biden administration will have to be very strongly encouraged to do that. There's a lot of people who don't want to change much in this country. They have to be very strongly encouraged by, among other things, great marches and actions. Carla Frisch, first your assessment of the Biden plan.
Right. Great question. So there's the Biden-Harris climate plan that was released as part of the campaign. And then, as you mentioned, there was a task force put together with leaders from all walks of life, including Senator Sanders, that also laid out what needs to happen on climate in the U.S. And I will say on the Biden-Harris climate plan, it is the boldest plan we've ever seen from a presidential candidate or a president-elect. Climate featured more in the election conversations this year than ever before. And if you look into the details of the plan, what you see is a mirror of what the science and analysis about limiting warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius also said. So limiting warming, avoiding the worst impacts of climate change, and really building a sustainable economy for the U.S. require moving towards clean electricity, using that clean electricity efficiently, of course, in our buildings, in our transportation, and in our industry, and also really optimizing the way that we manage our lands to help sequester CO2 in our farms and our forests and our wetlands. And that plan, the Biden climate plan, mirrors what the science and analysis shows us is needed in those areas.
Some of the details I found very interesting. There is a few lines, and of course it's very complex. There's so many things that have to be done, and it's a bit of a kitchen sink approach, but it does include many directions, I think, that lots of industries are not going to be happy about, like fuel economy standards, much more building electric vehicles very quickly. Some of the changes in agriculture would be a challenge for agribusiness. He also, though, emphasizes, it seems to me very important, granted really is politically important, the creation of really good American jobs. In the plan, there are some really controversial things, it seems to me, for many of his supporters. It does not eliminate nuclear power. It was very clear on the campaign trail that there would be no bans on fracking. I think he did that somewhat. He had to win Pennsylvania, which is a big, big fracking state in rural areas. And there's monies for clean coal. That's necessary to keep Joe Mancini happy on the Democratic side. There are lots of compromises in there. You know, there's also no production standards for electric vehicles. They could last for 50 years. They'll make them to last for maybe 15 years. And then you get a whole new cycle of pollution from having to build all of those things and refine the metals and everything. He doesn't go out on a limb on those issues that would really bring opposition from industry.
Well, I think what you're pointing out is addressing climate in the U.S. and building a sustainable economy is really a whole of the economy and a whole of society effort that touches all different parts of our lives. And I think that the Biden-Harris plan is bold in many areas. Of course, as you're saying, you know, no one's going to be happy with all elements of any plan. But I think it really moves us more in the direction that we need to be. And an important element that you were talking about was on clean jobs and industry. So we know that renewable energy creates more jobs per $1 million of investment than fossil fuels. And it's really a growing area of the economy, and solar and wind and electric vehicles. And the other important element of the plan that I think is newer on the national stage is the explicit focus on equity and environmental justice, and really looking at the intersection between addressing climate change, addressing pollution, air pollution, water pollution, criteria air pollutants, systemic racial injustice, and systemic economic injustice, and really starting to understand how all of those issues are linked, and how clean energy can help support progress in lots of different issue areas. And, of course, reducing the greenhouse gas emissions, reducing criteria air pollutants, and improving both indoor and outdoor air quality, and building sustainable jobs, and really creating the path forward for a sustainable economy for the U.S.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Carla Frisch, who works at the Rocky Mountain Institute. We've been talking about the Biden-Harris plan, climate change plan, that for me, it owes a lot to the discussion between Ocasio-Cortez and Sanders with John Kerry, the new envoy, Biden's envoy to the world. We didn't talk about that. It's very important, though, that the U.S. is going to try and corral China and various other countries to actually implement their plans and go way beyond it. It's not inconceivable if the U.S. offers some financial help. In any event, Carla, let's talk about what your expertise is in transforming cities. You've been writing about greening the cities and how important that is, and also local resilience and local supplying of energy. Why don't you get into those issues, why it's so important to transform cities, reconstruct them?
So when we talk about cities, you can think of that as a broad term that covers cities, municipalities, local governments, counties. So basically at that smaller scale, or, you know, sometimes cities are quite large, but cities themselves have quite a bit of authority. So one example is on building codes. You know, of course, those are distributed at the local level because of the different climate zones. And so local governments can help set building codes in ways that are right for their area, and also help optimize efficiency and really reduce energy loss and tighten up the housing and commercial building stock to make it more comfortable for residents. But there's lots of areas that cities are making huge progress on and have the opportunity to grow their infrastructure and build more sustainable economies. So actually, my colleagues have recently put out a paper on this where they look at the opportunities for mobility and accelerating vehicle electrification, and importantly, making sure that the space in cities really works for people to get around and offers all kinds of mobility alternatives. On power, you know, lots of cities are doing direct procurement of clean, renewable electricity. They're finding that that lowers costs. And there's lots of different and creative ways that they're using to buy that power. And then on broadband, on water, on natural systems, huge opportunities here to build green space into cities, both to get the air quality benefits, but really for the health and enjoyment of the residents of those cities.
Yeah, you know, I've done interviews with the people in Lancaster, California, up in the high desert east of LA, northeast. They've really electrified the whole city, and they've also bought a wind turbine farm out in the desert, like 20 miles away. And they're putting money into electric buses. That is an energy agency, the public agency that took over energy supply. And they're also contributing to building a big light rail line into the jobs that people work at in L.A. and eastern L.A. It seems to me that's a model for what cities can do. They really get very, very cheap energy from their wind plantation, but also because nearly every house in that city has solar panels now. And they contribute a very large amount of energy, and they also create this culture of energy conservation and use reduction in the city. Is that a possible model for cities across the country so that we don't have to spend trillions and trillions of dollars on the big continent-spanning grids from nuclear power plants and also coal plants still and the rest of them? Carla, that's my question.
Well, Bill, your key word there is electricity. And there's a huge opportunity for cities, for local governments on clean electricity. One, solar and wind power are cheaper than they've ever been before. In some cases, cheaper to build new than operate existing coal or gas fossil power plants. And as our electricity keeps getting cleaner and cleaner, when we use it in our buildings, in our vehicles, then they're getting cleaner and cleaner. So you mentioned on buildings, the opportunity here is instead of combusting gas, and we don't always combust it fully in our homes for HVAC or hot water, we can use clean electricity for our appliances and our HVAC and both help reduce our greenhouse gas impact, but also significantly improve our indoor air quality. Because often the NOx emissions from a gas stove can be higher than outdoor ambient air quality standards. And on the transportation front, it's the same thing with electric vehicles. As electricity gets cleaner and cleaner, it's already at the point where driving an electric vehicle is cleaner than driving a gas-powered vehicle. So we can start to make that shift to electric transportation. And then if you think about, you know, walking the streets of a city and breathing the air or standing at a bus stop, the more electric vehicles you have on the road, that really helps with the air quality, particularly in cities. So it's a huge opportunity.
And, you know, one thing I liked about one of the reports from you that I read, greening the city, having just a greater tree canopy, doing urban agriculture, those things greatly reduce the heat island effect in cities, therefore using much less energy for air conditioning. And it also makes for a beautiful city and a city that's more walkable and bikeable for alternative transport. And it makes people proud of their city and recognizing the importance of that reconstruction. I gather
that's right, Bill. And I think that green space has been particularly important, as we're all dealing with COVID, too, in dense urban areas where folks have been trying to stay indoors and trying to stay isolated, having access to a park, you know, a bit of nature to be able to get outside, and not only helps the city look beautiful and reduce emissions, but really provide that bit of respite and health for residents. And Bill, one thing I wanted to pick up on that you were talking about is the role of cities in helping push the national conversation. What we've seen the last 4 years is we had a federal government that was not focused on climate. That could be a bit of an understatement. And cities, along with counties, tribes, states, businesses and investors, artists, cultural institutions like museums, universities, and colleges, they took a real leadership role and stood up and said, we are continuing to move forward on climate, and we have control over our own campuses, our own location on the things that we can do to help move toward a clean energy future. But we can also help influence our peers, help influence the rest of the U.S., and help influence on a national stage. And if you look at the coalitions of cities, states, and businesses, and other leaders in the U.S. that have committed to climate action, it's almost 70% of U.S. GDP. Almost 70% of U.S. GDP. That is globally significant. It's bigger than any country GDP except the U.S. itself.
Yeah, and I have to say, I sort of like that slogan, save the cities, save the planet. After all, it's the cities that are driving the extractionism in all of our urban areas, the mining, the coal, the extraction of oil, the transport of oil, the refining of oil, all of that is to serve the cities. If the cities, in fact, go electric, the coal companies would go under very, very, very rapidly. It's the cities that sort of drive so much consumption. And if we can reconstruct the cities, it's a great thing. Carla Frisch, you've been really helpful in talking about this. It seems to me one final part of the solution is political. The Biden-Harris plan is actually a huge advance in many ways. It makes some compromises. It seems to me it's disappointing in a few ways, but you don't get everything, and calculations of acceptability. In any event, it seems to me that there's going to be a lot of push from people who really don't want to change, or who say, well, the other industries have to change, but our industry, oh no, we're somehow going green on our own, whatever they're going to say. Or that we're going to do geoengineering and new technology like clean coal. They have their own plan, and they're going to really resist the idea of reconstructing the economy. It does seem to me that there has to be a political push from the grassroots, and unions are also important in building that culture of creating clean energy. What's your sense of it? I see the need for some great marches and actions, and even some, the kinds of civil disobedience that the Sunrise Movement and Extinction Rebellion do, calling for especially young people. Our lives depend on it. Our children's lives depend on it. How do you see that? It seems to me that political action would probably be necessary to push a meaningful agenda.
Right. And what you're pointing out there, Bill, is that solutions to climate really require an all-of-society approach. And I think a great example of success has been the movement towards 100% clean energy. So just going back a couple years, in 2017, Hawaii was the only state committed to and put into law that they were going to move to 100% clean energy. And at that time, I think there was more than 30 cities who had made that commitment. And just fast forward from 2017 to 2020, now 13 states and Puerto Rico have committed to 100% clean. More than 170 cities have committed to 100% clean. And more than 30 have actually already achieved it. And Sierra Club tracks this, so you can see the new commitments online. But what's amazing to me about that is it starts with one conversation with people at a city council or citizens talking to their state government about wanting to move in this direction. And the movement has just grown. We've seen the commitments. We've seen the follow-through on meeting the commitments. And now 100% clean energy by 2035 is a key tenet of the Biden-Harris platform. We've got conversations all over Capitol Hill on what a clean electricity standard, what a clean energy standard might look like. And it's a really live national policy conversation that's moving much more quickly than I would have anticipated in 2017. So that quick shift is really built on the foundation of Americans who support this transition. And if you look at the polling, 79% of Americans want to move towards clean energy. 79%, that's a huge part of America. And taking action in their own communities helps continue to build this momentum that we're now seeing play out on the national and international stage. It's really amazing.
Carla Frisch of the Rocky Mountain Institute, I really appreciate your work and your optimism. In fact, your warranted optimism. There really have been enormous changes in the last 5 or 10 years across this country in terms of public attitudes and, in fact, in terms of clean energy, different kinds of alternative transport, building standards, in fact, even conservation and use reduction and questioning of the real high consumption way of life in this country. It can't be replicated across the world, that's for sure. Carla Frisch of the Rocky Mountain Institute, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Bill. And I think you're right. We've made a lot of progress, and together we have a good ways to go, but we're on the path to get there.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bill.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Whoa, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be, lost and upon us.